greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. And the Law Hour is brought to you in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Gold Clause case when we come back. Yeah, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, they've been banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they're teaching the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche, and I say this is a radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Now, are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion? Your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. Our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits for their observance. Now, you know every law has a penalty. You don't have to know what the penalty to a law is in order to suffer from its effect. Now, whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, Karma, or something else, it's automatic, and it works just like AIDS, herpes, or VD, which happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we've been talking about this thing of the check, and the check then devolved into the Gold Clause case, which we've been discussing last time and this time. The Gold Clause case is between a bank, the Hawkeye Bank of Iowa, and the insurance company. Now, this insurance company up here took a lease that dated back with a Gold Clause in paragraph 2 to 1917. And a question arose as to whether or not this Gold Clause could be enforced in 1995-96, and the answer was yes, it could. And that's because there was a novation. A novation is an adhesion contract. It's a contract or a term and condition that you might not know anything about, but it's binding upon you because you agreed to it. And a question arises, well, when did you agree to it? Well, you know, oftentimes in life we make these novations, these adhesion contracts, without understanding what an adhesion contract or a novation is. And that's why I have been ridiculing and making fun of this whole process called voting. Now, the presumption of life is, or at least the presumption of politics, is that the voter is the sovereign. The voter is the boss. The voter is the master. And that's the general concept. The truth of the matter is the voter is the peon. The voter is the serf. The voter is the ward of his master, the politician that he's voting into office. That's the truth of the matter. Now, of course, if you tell a slave that he's a slave, once he understands that he's a slave, he now knows what the problem is and he can set about to rectify the problem. You tell a slave that he's a free man. Once you've convinced him that he's a free man, he can never change his status as a slave because he believes he's free and he wants to stay right where he's at. That never won't change. Voters are slaves that do not understand their condition in life. Voters are servants who actually believe that they're the masters, not understanding the law. So let's see if we can understand the law here. Private property is the foundation of freedom and liberty. And without private property, you cannot be free and you cannot enjoy liberty. So in the Ten Commandments, which is the author of freedom and liberty, in fact, the Bible says, the Bible, talking about this law, calls it the perfect law of liberty. You may not believe that, but your Creator believed it. And He designed a set of laws called the Ten Commandments to enshrine, to ensure that the common man driving a Walmart truck would have the highest level of liberty and freedom that's available in civilized society. Now, somebody comes along and says, well, gee, this Walmart truck driver having freedom and liberty over here is not conducive to me being a parasite and reducing the Walmart truck driver to my service to serve me, to support me, because I'm too lazy to go to work. So there are forces, there are people out there in the world who do not want to work, do not want to produce, that want to act as and want to live the life of a parasite. And they want to suck off of society. And they've been doing it very effectively now for nearly 75 years, well, since 1933 with the New Deal. Now, with the New Deal, they took gold out of general circulation. And they didn't take it out of general circulation for no good purpose. They took it out of circulation so that they could reduce the common man from a condition of freedom and liberty to that of serfdom and slavery. And they did it. Worked like a shot. It's working to this day. Works every day that you use checks and credit cards. Every time you write a check, you are ratifying your own slavery. Every time you use your credit card, every time you pay interest on that credit card, you are ensuring that your masters will stay in their positions of power and that you will remain powerless. If you want to regain your condition of liberty and freedom, you have to get your property rights back. That's why God told you, do not use anything short of just weights and balances. And that's why your Federal Reserve, your politicians, and your government encourages you and tells you, don't you use anything short of Federal Reserve notes, commercial paper, and credit cards. Now, some people would view this as a war between the forces and the people of good and the forces and the people of evil. I don't see any war going on here. Hell, this thing was settled 75, 80 years ago. Hell, the forces of the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto have won this war hands down from day one. And all of the people love it. They love their serfdom. They love their indebtedness. Now, of course, they complain a lot, you know, when they're disrupted. But the general rule of thumb is that if you had to make a choice here between the Ten Commandments and God, gold and silver coin, and the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, Barack Obama, and debt, usury, and slavery, you would choose Barack, debt, and the Ten Planks, hands down, 10-1, over God and the Ten Commandments. As evidenced by the fact that that's what you've already done. This is already done past tense. We're not talking about, boys and girls, if you're not on your guard and watching every day, somebody's going to sneak in here and impose the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto on you. Hell, they've already done that. That's a done deal. All I'm doing here is reporting to you on old history. This is what's been done. Now, some people write to the law school and they say, oh, I want to get out of the system. I want to do something. I want to rectify this. Well, for those 5 or 10 people out there, listen up. Talking again about this case, let me give you the citation on the case. Turn back here to page 1. So that you can get a copy of it. The case number is 95-3666. Now, that's the appellate number in the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals. And you can get this from Find Law. So if you'll go to Find Law, which is called caselaw.lp, findlaw.co, you're looking for the case called Norwest Bank, Fort Collins, Trustee Appellant. That's Norwest Bank, Fort Collins, N.A., Trustee Appellant, versus American Life and Casualty Insurance Company. They're the defendant appellee. And this is an appeal from the United States District Court for the Southern District of Iowa. Now, if you've got Lexus service, you can get this case off of Lexus from the Southern District of Iowa, and you would use the number 95-3666. And then the court clerk can go in there and get that case. If you get it from the court now, they're going to charge you something for it. I don't know what the price is going to be, but if you get it from Find Law, it's free. You can get the opinion. If you want the pleadings and the whole case, you know, you want to dig into the briefs, why you can get that right out of the court clerk's office for the Southern District of Iowa. Now, here's what the gist of the story is. There's no question that between 1933 and 1977, the lessors could not successfully have demanded payment in gold coin from any lessee. But, in this case, they claimed that the 1917 clause was readopted by the 1990 warranty agreement and became effective pursuant to the 1977 statutory amendment. And the American Life Insurance Company admits that the 1933 Act would not have prohibited the parties from contracting for a gold clause in 1990. But argues rather that the terms of the 1917 lease were permanently altered by the operation of the 1933 Act, which had erased the gold clause from the 1917 lease. So their position is that House Joint Resolution 192, which remember we talked about earlier here in the series, talking about the abolition of gold under the New Deal, abolished that clause in the lease. Now, if that were true, I'm just going to parenthetically add in here, they would be making a taking without just compensation in violation of the Fifth Amendment. Now, this is never an issue that's been tested in the courts. However, looking back on it though in hindsight, based upon this case here, that's the conclusion that I would arrive at based upon what this court has said. And by the way, these people, after the Eighth Circuit finished this, they appealed this to the U.S. Supreme Court when they got an adverse judgment. And the Supreme Court remanded it back. They rejected it and said, no, the Eighth Circuit decided that correctly. So it's been tested at the Supreme Court level, and the Supreme Court says, yep, this gold clause thing over here is in full force and effect. And boys and girls, that's what I'm using right now today. We got our gold and silver back. And I want to point out that gold and silver, that is property. Property has never been assessed or taxed in the United States. And you've heard me say that there's a 7 times difference between the taxes due on gold and paper. And that's because of Diefendorf versus Galay, along with this case here, reestablishing the gold clause. Now, gold and silver is very valuable to us, especially those of us down here at the bottom, feeding on the bottom, in trying to maintain our liberty and trying to maintain our property, trying to maintain our wealth. Now, let's just try this out. I'm going to give you a little story here. A young lady over here came to my wife the other day, and she said she had a piece of property that she wanted to sell her, 5 acres and a house, and this house has been sold to another party, the lady that's living in it right now, and is paying $300 a month over a 15-year period on this $26,000 lease, and it pays, I think, 8% interest. I wanted to sell that to my wife, and so my wife, now get this, it's pretty good thing. I'm going to sell it to her for $13,000 or half price. What you're doing here is you're selling a mortgage for 50 cents on the dollar to get cash today. She's entitled to get paid the whole $26,000 over the next 15 years. Well, my wife turned it down at 50 cents on the dollar because we expect that the lady who's paying on this mortgage is going to be paying this mortgage off in 10 cent dollars here very shortly, as Ben Bernanke continually inflates the currency at 18% a year. It won't take very long for that $26,000 today to decrease in its purchasing power until, you know, maybe $26,000 will buy a loaf of bread at some point in the future. Now, that's the penalty that you pay when you're dealing in unjust weights and balances. It's the penalty you pay when you deal in usury and interest. This is why it's prohibited in the Scripture. The income tax is the penalty that you people are paying for dealing in commercial paper, Federal Reserve notes, stocks, and bonds, and so on. And those of us that deal in gold and silver coin don't pay that penalty. So, as a consequence, it makes more money. It generates more wealth for us. And that's why I'm making this report. If you'd like to make more wealth, go back to what produces wealth. That's labor, work, just weights and balances, and thou shalt not steal, which is the foundation of our personal property rights. Now, if you want poverty, if you want to lose your wealth, if you want oppression, then you just stay on the course that you're on. Hell, you're on the right track for that. You're already there. Stick right with the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. You stick with Barack Obama. You stick with John McCain. You stick with the political process and with your masters. You stick with paper money, credit cards, usury, and the banking system. You can't miss. Poverty is right around the corner, coming down on you like a ton of bricks. Now, nothing in the terms of the 1933 Act suggests that an existing gold clause would be erased or eliminated from the lease. Congress declared in House Joint Resolution 192, that any obligation which purports to give the obligee a right to require payment in gold to be against public policy, and stated that no such provision shall be contained in or made with respect to any obligation hereafter incurred. That was HJR, House Joint Resolution 192, of June 5, 1933. Now, it's codified at Chapter 48, Statute 112, originally codified at 31 U.S.C., Section 463. It is currently codified as amended at 31 U.S.C., 5118D2. The 1933 Act did not direct that existing gold clauses were to be severed from existing contracts, but instead rendered them unenforceable. It stated that every obligation, whether it was incurred and whether or not it had a gold clause, was dischargeable upon payment in United States currency. And then they cite Norman versus Baltimore and Ohio Railroad. Now, I wanted to point out to you, notice that it's dischargeable upon payment, not payable upon payment, but dischargeable. And that's what Federal Reserve notes do. Remember, it's a discharge in equity. It's not a payment at law. Now, when we pay a debt at law with gold and silver coin, we obliterate, we destroy that debt. When you discharge the debt, something of the original vitality of the debt continues to exist. Do you remember that story from Stanek versus White? I'll give you the citation. Stanek versus White, 172 Minnesota, 390. All right, now, going on here, they tell us that upholding the 1933 Act is valid exercise of the constitutional power to establish a monetary system, and determining that enforcement of gold clauses was incompatible with the public interest. The truth be known, this was the attempt. In fact, it was the move that was made by the political process in 1933 to divorce you from your property rights. And you, like my granddad, and you, your granddad, and his great-granddad, all went down to the Bank of America, lined up during this emergency, this Great Depression of the 1930s. They lined up with their gold coins that they had in their hands, and they walked into that bank and put it on the counter voluntarily and walked out with paper money. And that is precisely what Joseph did to the Egyptians during the Great Famine. Precisely. That's in Genesis chapter 47. Now, what you saw in 1933 with Franklin D. Roosevelt was a reenactment of the seven-year famine in ancient Egypt. It was the massive transfer of the wealth and property of the people to the wealth and property of the aristocrats, that is, the nobility. And the people did it voluntarily. And there's no recovery from that. Once you've alienated yourself from your property, it's gone. Now, many times people will say to me, well, I didn't know. They're always kind of plaintive. You know, when they say, I didn't know. Like, I'm supposed to feel sorry for you. Well, boys and girls, I feel sorry for you, but there's nothing I can do about it. When you get a birth certificate for your child, it's an act that once it's completed, is done and done forever. And there's no recovery from it. None. Once you get a marriage license and you marry with that marriage license, it's an act that has consequences from which there will be no recovery. Now, that's why law is probably, in my view, the most important educational tool that you can learn. And that's the primary thrust of the Bible and the Ten Commandments, is to teach you law, to give you a degree in law, so that you understand the law, so that you understand the most important aspect of life, and that's law. I don't care whether you live in Australia, or Russia, or China, or Brazil, anywhere you live, the one all-pervasive event in life that you face day in and day out is the law of your land. If you're in Brazil, by God, you're going to face and confront the law of Brazil every day of your life for the rest of your life. And if you live in Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the United States, I don't care where it is, Washington, Oregon, California, the law is in front of your face. It's in your face every single day. Whether you're driving down the street, buckling your seatbelt, you know, spanking your child, packing your kids' lunch for school, whatever it is, the law in some form now is going to impact upon you. So when you open a checking account, a bank account, or you sign a contract for a mortgage, you get a marriage license, a birth certificate, all of these acts, all of these events in your life, common ordinary things like just going down and opening a checking account at the bank, those are regulated by law, and they're going to have an impact upon you. They're going to have an outcome. The actions that you take today are going to have an outcome. Now, your Creator says you'll get better outcomes if you practice the Ten Commandments and my 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. We came along and said, no, we don't think that's true. We're going to practice our own law. We're going to create our own legislature. We're going to elect our own representatives, and they'll make our laws for us. We're going to have our own president. That's what we told our God back in 1 Samuel chapter 8. This is back around 1000 B.C. And our Creator came to our forefathers. You know, it wasn't you and me. It was our great-great-great-great-granddaddies, you know, about 75 generations ago. And he said to them then, he didn't plead with them. He didn't whine and cajole. Won't you give your heart to Jesus today? I don't think your Creator out there gives a rat's ass what you do. If that's what you want to do, get after it. But he did take the time, effort, and energy. I got to give him credit for that. He took time out of his busy schedule. I'm assuming he's a busy God. He says he's a worker. He took time. He stopped, and he talked to Samuel. He said, now let's dictate a letter to these fools. Tell them what they're doing. It's a short chapter. It's 1 Samuel chapter 8. If you want to read something that make you cry, that's got to be the most politically incompetent event in the history of Israel. If you can point to a more politically incompetent decision that we ever made, send me a letter, would you? Let me consider it. And so our forefathers said to our Creator, this is
said to Jesus. At least they said this to sweet Jesus. Said, nevertheless, we will have a king to rule over us. Okay. So sweet Jesus said, well, okay, no hard feelings here, but you know the day will come when you'll cry out to me in that day because of the king that you set over you. And in that day when you cry out to me, I will not hear you. So when I have a student here in class, I tell him, you save your breath, Tommy. You don't need to pray to Jesus about George Bush because he's already told you I ain't listening to this crap. And this is the same God, remember, that says, I'm the same yesterday, today, and forever. And I change not, so he's not very likely to change his opinion. Now remember, this Gold Clause case over here fits right in with the Ten Commandments. So anytime you get tired of George Bush and the income tax and Social Security and poverty and the Great Depression and runaway inflation and rationing and starvation, you know, you can always come back home. There's an outlet. It's called the Prodigal Son story. The Prodigal Son story. You read that parable called the Prodigal Son. When you get a belly full of living life the way you think it ought to be lived, you know, in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, well, you can always come back home. That's the good news. The bad news is, when you come back home, you're not going to live in the big house. You're going to end up living in the bunkhouse, which, as the prodigal son said, is a hell of a lot better than where I am today. I think we're going to find out that the bunkhouse in the kingdom of God is going to be better than the big house under the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Now, of course, you haven't figured that out yet, but one of these days you will. It just takes a little time. You haven't gotten to the point yet where you can see that. But you will. This is the point behind depressions and runaway inflations and wars and droughts and floods and famines. The purpose behind all of these adverse events that we see going on here in the United States, and indeed worldwide, but particularly here in the United States, is to teach us a lesson. This is a lesson coming from our Creator, and it says, you know, I thought I had enough of you. It's time for you to come down to earth, as my old granddaddy used to say. It's time for you to come down to earth, little Georgie. All right, going back here now to the Gold Clause, he says, the idea that the Gold Clause disappeared from the original lease is not supported by the specific text of the statute, which contemplates that contracts might continue to contain Gold Clauses by referring to every obligation heretofore or hereafter incurred. Moreover, the text of the 1977 amendment refers to obligations containing Gold Clauses. You know, when I make a contract today, I put a Gold Clause on it. When you come to school here, we got a Gold Clause. When you buy one of my cows, we deal in gold. Now, I'm not the only guy in America that does this. 5% of the people of America own, possess, control, use all of the gold and silver in this country. 95% of you out there don't have any. I'm one of that 5%, and I just wanted to point that out to you. And if you'd like to join that 5%, then you're joining the Ten Commandments. You can rest assured, that Warren Buffett and Bill Gates have all the gold and all the silver that they're entitled to, all that they want. And you can rest assured that the moneyed powers, that is, the bankers and the politicians and the people who own that 5% of the gold, are smart enough to understand the law concerning property, thou shalt not steal. Now, they may have convinced all the rest of you out there in radio land that you ought to give up your rights to property. But the people that have all the money and have all the property understand thou shalt not steal perfectly. And those people do not practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. They create it. They promote it. They sell it. They profit from it. Now, for the rest of you bottom feeders out there, let's take a look at this. How does that affect you and me out here doing our jobs? You know, driving truck from Walmart. Well, hell, Bob, all you have to do is pay attention. there's a great famine coming, and I can't think of a better business to be in than food and a famine. Bob, come on, wake up. You can bet that if God told us, we will do the exact opposite. So you plan your financial future around that. While Henry Paulson tells us that we've about reached the bottom of this economic reversal, this recession over here, you can just about bet that we haven't got started good yet. When they tell you that the housing bubble that popped is just about at the bottom, go out and buy a house, you can just about bet that it's exactly the opposite of that. I was talking to the gold broker yesterday. Went to Springfield yesterday. I was talking to him, and he was talking about his neighbor. Now, my gold broker is no poor man. He drives a Lexus, wears gold all over him, and he lives in Springfield, Missouri, in a posh neighborhood. And the house next door to him is being auctioned off. It was repossessed, and it is being auctioned on the courthouse steps. And he was looking at me and he says, "My God, I can't hardly believe that's happening in my neighborhood." Well, that's right. It isn't just happening in the poor neighborhoods, it's happening all over America in the middle class, and that's the objective. The objective is to impoverish the American middle class. So if you're in that American middle class, you're about to be impoverished. And if you don't want to be impoverished, it's probably at this, by the time you listen to this program, it's probably too late to save your wealth. Probably. Not necessarily, but, you know, just probably. And there might be some hope for you, but it's not very likely at this juncture of time. I mean, we're on the slippery slope and we're halfway down, you know. When you're on the slippery slope and you're halfway down at 50 miles an hour, getting back up to the top ain't going to be easy. And avoiding that crash down at the bottom, you know, that's going to be tricky. Maybe not impossible, but it's going to be tricky. Now listen, I got to give you a reminder here, children, that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in 112 countries daily over the internet and radio. For more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the law hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well at georgegordon.org. All of these law hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the law hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the law or an editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend will necessarily reciprocate. Now, keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. However, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear in this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the law or an editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Now, I said, if you listen, you know, to the tea leaves over here, you're reading the International Forecast or the Privateer or the Money Changer, you should be prepared for, and you should be preparing for, prepared, past tense, and preparing, that's future tense, for runaway inflation, which is underway right now. Economic depression, that's deflation, which will come in about 18 to 36 months. And then prepare your economic future accordingly. You can prepare for and expect rationing and standing in line to share the shortage and ultimately famine and starvation in the United States of America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, England, France, Germany. And if you want to make money off of it, you know, you want to profit from it. Great fortunes were made in the last Great Depression. And so, I teach a business school, I teach a business class, and we show you how to take advantage of those opportunities. I don't make it that way. Hell, if I had my druthers, you know, I'd opt for depression right now before I'd go through runaway inflation. And that's because runaway inflation, just take a look at Zimbabwe. Hell, they got money coming out there, you know, the wazoo. They got plenty of money down there, no shortage of money. What they got a shortage of is cooking oil, gasoline, matches. It's the stuff that you buy every day on the shelves. There's none available. Hell, even the staples down there, you know, like just wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil that we have to eat, for crying out loud, don't have them. They're facing starvation. And so they're practicing communists down there in Rhodesia, and the people in South Africa are following in that footstep just as fast as they can. And so I'd say, you people in South Africa, get ready. Gird up your loins, because that's what's coming to you next. But now, you know, when you take a look at the future based upon Bible prophecy, the Ten Commandments, and you say, gee, where are the economic opportunities? Well, now let's start thinking about gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, oil, food, huh? And let's start shifting our investments from stocks and bonds and negotiable instruments, as I mentioned to you a little earlier. No, I'm not interested in buying some $26,000 note paying 8% interest for 50 cents on the dollar. Because that lady that's in possession of that note is going to lose her shirt. And she's trying to peddle it to me, and I'm sitting there saying, well, no, you know, nice lady. I don't mean her any ill will or any hard times, but, you know, I'm a businessman. I'm here to make money. Now, the other day, my wife made a deal. I'll tell you a little story here. I've told you the story once or twice before. It's called the Barn Pork Story. Anyway, she bought this house down here, and she paid this lady, I think it was $30,000, in Federal Reserve note dollars, depreciating Federal Reserve note dollars that one day are going to be worth about a loaf of bread. That's what happened over in Germany. It's what happened in Argentina. It's what happened in Zimbabwe. It's what's happened every place in the world where we've tried communism. It's never failed yet. I don't see any reason why it's going to fail in the future. Now, when I sell that house, which she did the other day, she sold it for $100,000 in gold. Well, $100,000 worth of gold at about $1,000 an ounce, which was 100 ounces of gold, payable over the next 4 or 5 years. So she bought the house, and she bought it in Federal Reserve note dollars, and she's paying for it over 6 years, you know, until the year of release. In Federal Reserve note dollars, the lady that sold it's going to take it in cheaper dollars, and then the guy that bought it is going to have to be paying more and more dollars to buy higher and higher priced gold. So she's making a profit on both ends. It's non-taxable. Sure, she bought it for 30 and she sold it for 5,000, you know, 100 ounces of gold at $50 an ounce. She sold it for five. She bought it for 30 and sold it for five at a $25,000 loss. Ends up with 100 ounces of gold. Now, that was my wife, and she's just a girl. And how she did that before lunch, and then when she got through with that transaction, she put lunch on the table. So, that's why I always tell people, you know, I married well. And instead of me marrying a Christian doormat, you know, that I can oppress, I married a Hebrew helpmeet that is a very valuable businesswoman, very valuable wife. And she's a good cook on top of that. I like that. So that's why I always tell people, you know, I married very well. My grandmother would be very proud of me. She'd say, my grandson, Georgie, married well. And that's what the old ladies used to say. And the old women. All right, so if you're sitting here on top of your wealth and you're watching it dissipate with the value of your house, the value of your business and so on, well, okay, you're probably going to go down and out. But don't commit suicide. I mean, hell, when you get down to zero COD, hell, you're in a great position. You need to get, and this is what I tell my students, so you got to get to zero COD. At that point in time, you're 36 months away from $100,000 in gold coin sitting in a hole in the ground. 36 months. It takes about 36 months to start your new business. Now, I don't care if you're in the middle of a depression. I don't care if you're in the middle of a boom or a bust. Wherever you're at, there's always business going on. Every day of the Great Depression of the 1930s, there were people that were buying, selling, and trading. And that's where the money's at. The money is in buying, selling, and trading. You buy it for a dollar, you sell it for two, and you make it on the 2% principle. It's very simple. Now, American life relies on cases stating broad principles such as contract provisions that are contrary to public policy or void to suggest that the 1933 statute operated to erase existing gold clauses. The cases cited do not support its claim that existing gold clauses were rendered unrevivable by the 1933 Act. None of the cases involved the incorporation of a once prohibited clause into the new contract by reference to an original document containing it. The 1933 Act did not magically erase the gold clause from the 1917 lease. Although it rendered the clause unenforceable, there is no reason that it could not be incorporated by reference in a new lease obligation entered into in 1990, which it was. American Life suggests that even if the clause were not voided in 1933, the 1969 transfer of the leasehold interest to State Auto severed the clause from the original lease. And it claims that transaction was a novation that took place during the time that gold clauses were banned, but does not explain why that would delete the clause from the original lease or prevent later adoption of the original clause. The gold clause would, of course, not have been enforceable against State Auto because its obligation was entered into prior to the 1977 amendment when it transferred the leasehold to Statesman in 1985. However, it did not purport to transfer its own obligations, but instead described the leasehold by the terms of the original lease. Similarly, the transfer of interest from Statesman to American Life in 1990 referred to the terms and conditions of the 1917 lease. Boys and girls, gold and silver in America is back. It's been back since 1986. So, and it was Ron Paul, God love him, Ron Paul, who was instrumental in getting this gold clause put back into, I believe it was called the Tax Reform Act of 1986, establishing a mint in West Point, New York, and they're minting our American eagles and gold eagles and silver eagles up there in the mint. And Ron Paul was the only non-communist running for office here. Now, the American people have rejected Ron Paul. Well, I don't blame him. He's probably a radical. And in fact, the Ten Commandments have been rendered as being radical. I don't deny it. So if you want to be staid and sedate and normal and go along with the mainstream and float downstream, well, you stick right with the program that you're on. If you want to make money, then I'd suggest that you get into gold and silver as rapidly as possible. Now, for most of you, I say it's probably impossible. Most people have their money tied up in their real estate. And you needed to have unloaded your real estate by June of 2005. If you didn't unload your real estate by June of 2005, you were on the slippery slope from that point on. Now, I'm still making money in real estate. I'm still buying and selling and trading real property. There's money to be made buying, selling, and trading real property. Everybody needs a piece of land. I don't care who you are. You've got to have a piece of land to stand on, to live on, a place to put your property on, a place to store your property, if nothing else. We all need a piece of real estate. It's just that the value of that real estate is going to depreciate as time progresses along, well, at least in dollar terms. Now, all wealth comes out of the ground. And this piece of real estate should produce your livelihood. This is the place where you plant your garden. This is the place where you harvest your seeds. This is the place where you get your water and sleep at night. So don't get me wrong, you need a piece of real estate. I just disagree with people that you need your piece of real estate in downtown Cleveland. I think that your real estate would be better located if you were out in the countryside someplace. That's my personal opinion. And that's what I've done. I'm out in the countryside. Now, you need to convert whatever paper assets you've got, if you still can. I mean, there comes a point in time when you can't convert your paper assets, but if you can, convert them into hard stuff. And the hard stuff that you need is a 4-year supply of food. Now, if you're watching this Midwest flood, you have just watched the price of corn go up by a buck and a half in the last 2 weeks, which doesn't make corn overpriced at $8 a bushel. I mean, a bushel of corn at $8, it's 60 pounds of corn. I was in the health food store last night, and I noticed that all of the grains were $1 a pound. So when you go in and pay retail at the health food store for organic corn, you're paying $1 a pound or $1.15 a pound. You're paying $60 a bushel. So looked at pragmatically, when you buy corn for $8 a bushel versus $60 a bushel in the health food store, well, that's a buy. There's nothing wrong with corn at $8 a bushel. I'm just pointing out that 2 or 3 years ago, you could have bought corn for $4 a bushel. And then the corn that you've got in your warehouse would now be worth $8 a bushel. You'd have doubled your money. See? So if you buy corn today at $8 a bushel, when it goes to $16, you will have doubled your money. And is corn going to $16 a bushel? Without a doubt. Without a doubt. These poor people, I watch them on television at night. These poor Americans, they haven't got a clue as to what's going on next. They're complaining about, oh, they're kind of plaintive about it. Oh, the prices are just terrible. They kind of cry and whine a little bit, you know, for the newscaster, you know, who's going to put this on the 6 o'clock news, you know, for me to watch. One good thing, though, is coming out of this. I noticed here the other night on the 6 o'clock news, there was a company in Springfield. It's called Springfield Floral, and they sell seeds. And they said that their seeds business has gone up by 50% this year, 50% over last year. People are buying seeds and they're planting them in their backyards to grow vegetables instead of spending the money at the supermarket. God love them. The people in Springfield that are buying those seeds and planting them in their backyards are adding to the production of food. God love them. That's the solution to the problem. You want prices to go down? Produce more of it. Supply and demand is what that's called. Supply and demand. Now, Americans don't do that. As a general rule, they want to stand in line and cry and complain. Oh, I need my representative to send me more welfare so I can go out in the marketplace and bid the prices even higher and share the shortage. Get off your dead ass and go out there and plant some vegetables and drive the price down by producing. That's the solution to the problem. If you're concerned about high oil prices over here, there's a solution to it. I was watching the news the other night, and Barack Obama says, "Why you can't drill your way out of a shortage in prices like this? That's a communist for you." Of course, he works for ExxonMobil. Let me ask you this. Just think about this. I mean, hell, even if you've been listening to Mr. Rogers over here, if you got an ounce of common sense, you'll be able to figure this out. Let me ask you this. If you've got 100 barrels of oil, and the price is $130 a barrel, if you went out and you produced one more barrel of oil, and now you've got 101 barrels of oil, would that tend to drive the price up or down? I know that's a real hard economic question. Let's try it the other way. If you've got 100 barrels of oil, take one of them away and throw it away with barrel at $130 a barrel. Now instead of 100 barrels, you got 99. Would that tend to make the price go higher or lower? Well, for all of you dullards out there that can't add and subtract, multiply or divide, let me tell you the answer to that. The more you produce, the tendency is to drive the price lower. Now, in America, when we were practicing the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not steal, we had thousands and thousands of little oil companies. And they were out here drilling wells in the ground. And as recently as the 1980s, those little wells that had been drilled all over America were producing 17% of our well. They're called stripper wells. They'd already played out and been closed down. They're just sold off to little guys. They were still producing 17%. So the big oil companies came in. Remember, I told you the story. They came in here with this Environmental Protection Act and shut all these stripper wells down, eliminated that 17%, because the big companies are only interested in wells that produce 15,000 barrels a day. They're interested in drilling in the continental shelf where they can get millions of barrels of oil. They're not interested in thousands of barrels, hundreds of barrels, 50 barrels. But let me ask you this. If we had those 100,000 wells in America that have been closed down, and if, in fact, tomorrow morning we could magically open them up and they would produce 17% of our oil, would that tend to drive the price of oil up or down? The answer, boys and girls, it would tend to drive the price of oil down. Every barrel of oil that you can produce will tend to drive the price down. Therefore, common sense should tell you that you want to drill for, work for, get out there and produce as much oil as possible. And so you just listen to your presidential candidates, and the one that tells you, get off your ass and go to work, is probably the one that's doing you the biggest service. The one that says, that isn't going to work, and don't do that, and don't work, and sit down, light up a camel, and sit on your ass, and don't worry about it, and I'll take care of everything, vote for me, that's probably a guy that ain't working for you. He's probably working for ExxonMobil. Now, the same thing is true here when we're dealing in any form of business. If you've got something like a house right now, it's a drug on the market. It's got awful hard to sell something and get top dollar for it. Just ask yourself, you know, compare the oil now with housing. You've got this god-awful glut of houses on the market. Does that tend to make the price of houses go up or down? If you have a glut of oil on the market, does it tend to make the price of oil go up or down? Can you people connect those dots? Now, your politicians are going to follow the dictates of the big oil companies and the big corporations, which are going to work in opposition to the Ten Commandments. But you and I, boys and girls, we can all practice the Ten Commandments. See, you don't need all the people in your city or your county. It doesn't require all the people in Ozark County to practice the Ten Commandments with me in order for my prosperity to continue or to materialize. I don't care what the rest of the people in this county do. All I have to do is practice the Ten Commandments. It is an economic system. It's just the way it works. When you practice communism, you will end up poor, poverty-stricken, standing in line, sharing the shortage. The Ten Commandments is a system that dictates that you get off your ass and go to work. Produce more. So when Springfield Floral announced that their seed sales had gone up by 50%, here's the people that are buying those seeds, planting them in their backyards, throwing out the lawn and putting in rutabagas and carrots and cucumbers and so on. Those people, as they get out of the marketplace, See, every time they harvest one cucumber in the backyard, that's one cucumber less that they're going to buy down here at Kroger's, which leaves more cucumbers on the shelf at Kroger's. And Kroger then looks at all those cucumbers that they're not selling, and they say, cucumbers don't move well at $1 a cucumber. Maybe we better lower the price to 99 cents, 98 cents, 97 cents, 96 cents. The price of cucumbers will come down inversely proportional to the number of cucumbers that are available for consumption. Same thing with oil and houses and everything else. Now, the bad news for your houses over here, boys and girls, is that there's so many houses on the market today that the forecasters that I'm looking at say that it's going to take 10 years. Now, this is 2008. It's going to take until the year 2018 for real estate, 10 years from now, to recover. Now, I don't know if these guys are accurate looking into the future 10 years, but I'm pretty sure that they're accurate looking into the future for one more year, next year, the year after, two or three years. In fact, all of the numbers that I see being bandied about today tell us that whatever the price of your house is today, it's going to be half that in 36 months. Half that in 36 months. Now, there's still houses going to be bought, sold, and traded. There's always fools out there buying houses. I wouldn't buy one. Why would I buy a house for $200,000 today that 36 months from now I can buy for $100,000? And maybe in a distressed auction pay $50 cash for it. I mean, come on. Let's wake up and smell the coffee here. The way we make money is to buy at the bottom and then hang on and wait until the prices go up. All right, same thing is true here with gold. So if you've got gold today, you want to hang on to all the gold that you can. Now, if you want to unload your gold, send it to me. I'm in the market. That's what we take here at our school. Now, let me give you this case again here. I'm about running out of time. And I want you to, those of you that still have a mind to connect the dots, and I want you to go to Find Law. And it's called caselaw.lp.findlaw.co. And if you just type in Find Law in your computer, in your search engine, I think they'll take you there. Then you're looking for the case that says Norwest Bank, Fort Collins, N.A., trustee appellant. That's Norwest Bank, Fort Collins. Versus American Life and Casualty Insurance Company, defendant appellee. That's American Life and Casualty Insurance Company, defendant appellee. Decided in 1995. And that's going to tell you that story on gold. Now, go back to the Ten Commandments, boys and girls. It's an economic model. And that Ten Commandment economic model made America wealthy and successful, made you Australians wealthy and successful, and you New Zealanders and Canadians. And when you went to the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, have you noticed now that you're standing in line more and sharing more shortages? Get used to it, because there's going to be more standing in line and showing more shortages. I'm about out of time, kids. I'm going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard in 112 countries worldwide daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can all be accessed to their website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.